B-Pod Studios.
I, too, have been here 23 years. And it is a reminder, I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. And so having said that, I want me some glory hole. So I have that perspective.
And hello again, everyone. A very pleasant good afternoon, and welcome to Foxborough's Gillette Stadium for this Week 12 encounter of the AFC East leading New England Patriots and the 6-4 Dallas Cowboys atop the NFC East Division. Brady deep drop, throws across on a caught by Myers on the run to the near side.
Okay.
Gallops to the 40-45, cuts it right across midfield, yeah. And then he turns the legs inside the 45 of Dallas, driven down by Thomas at the 43.
Glory hole.
Steps to his left, he goes down the field. Right at the first down marker.
Oh, my God.
At the 49-yard line.
I want Mason Gordon.
And I snap to Jones.
Oh, there's
a first block. And he's high in the air. Jonathan Jones is there to knock him down. Trying to pick it up. He'll dive on it. Jones has it for the Patriots at the 13-yard line. The ball came loose in the end, but the Patriots take over nonetheless. After another block punt, the ball too high. Snap on the hand of Prescott. Gathers it in sidearms to the near side. Intercepted by Brandon Gilmore. A lazy throw by Prescott.
Nice try.
Picked off by Gilmore. Now motions to the left as Brady takes the snap. Backs up, looking left. Back shoulder fade for Harry in the end zone. Caught it! Touchdown, Patriots! Beautiful throw, terrific catch for his first career score, N'Keal Harry. That's the ball game. New England wins it over the Cowboys, 13-9 here at Gillette.
I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. And so having said that, I want me some glory hole. So I have that perspective.
Woo!
How about the Patriots?
10-1,
wild man.
10-1, baby.
Let's get it. Here you go.
Great job, man.
All right, congratulations, man. That's a great job. Hey, I like talking about situational football, man, all the way. All three phases, really a hell of a job. You know, making plays on offense, defense, great four-minute drive here at the end. Block, punt. Defense, no touchdowns. I mean, it's a good team victory. It's what we need. All right, so we've been working for it. It's what we are. Whatever the conditions are, whatever it takes. But congratulations, man. That's the way to grind it out this week. Grind it out today. Taking good care of the football. All right, damn good win. 10-1. Slate.
In order for you to be thankful, to give thanks, you got to have the proper perspective. We talked about it last night. And I think one thing that I saw tonight was the character of this team on display yet again. And I'm certainly thankful to be a part of a group like that. I'm thankful.
Talk to me.
To be 10-1.
Yes, sir.
We end up in here. 10-1. How do we feel about 10-1?
Oh, yeah! Oh, the town. So crazy. I don't like Slater's voice changing. He is not talking as much like a nerd anymore. And I don't like it. It's too deep a voice.
There's press conference Slater, where he kind of goes into that, and then there is team leader Slater.
Because he said, how does it feel to taste the sweet nectar of victory?
That's when he's pumped. That's when he's a little more energetic.
No, but what I'm saying is, the whole team is dour. Gronkowski's absolutely correct. The whole team's acting like lame-os. They're all party poopers. Come on, Slater. At least geek it up for us.
They need a little Scott Zolak in their lives. Did you see that video that the Patriots tweeted out yesterday where there's a camera in the play-by-play booth and it showed Scott Zolak making two of the calls that we just played there in that little montage, you know, one of them being the N'Keal Harry touchdown pass. And the greatest part of it isn't that Scott Zolak's going nuts, because we know he does that. We hear it. We've seen him in studio. We're all familiar with how energetic Scott Zolak is. It's the fact that their producer, Mark Capello, that we know, holds him back from falling out of the booth.
No, he
flips out so much.
That's actually, because I used to think that's what he's doing, but this is, he holds him so he'll shut up and let Sosie say what's going on.
What?
No, he has to physically hold him.
To not step on the call.
To not step on the call.
So Zolak stands up and freaks out, and immediately it's like your mom when she hit like a stop too fast in the car. The right arm goes out like mom's seatbelt.
Yeah,
it goes over his chest.
Because I guess that they've been having, back when Zolak first started, they were having a lot of trouble because Zolak didn't realize when you're on the radio that you're describing the action on the field.
How many years has he been doing this? He's been doing this long enough now where he doesn't need somebody to grab him. Well, unless it's to keep him from falling out of the booth.
Anybody on that broadcast. No, talk to Scott Zolak.
His first year on the sideline, he was on the sideline, and it was still Gil and Gino.
Yeah. Right.
And when the dude kind of he said he hooked it before the call even happened. He just gets excited.
Was that 6 years ago?
That was a while ago.
That was 6 years ago.
But listen, the system that they have in place, regardless of how you feel about it, is that when Scott starts spazzing out, Capello has to grab him.
Like, wrangle him.
Yeah, to go, shut up. Let Soucy. Because what's Soucy going to do? He's not going to talk over him. So, for instance, yes, there's the touchdown to N'Keal Harry. So, you know, Soucy's like, N'Keal Harry, let's see if he got his feet down. That's a great in the background. See, the people at home don't know what's going on. Yeah. Like, you know, oh, wow, if you look at the way he positioned his body and he got his feet down and they're just screaming in the background. Yes, and the only way to do it is you can't go in his ear and go, you know, hey, let Soucy talk. You have to grab him and basically suffocate him into not talking.
I mean, come on. Like, I think 1 week we just should tell Mark, you know what? See what happens if you don't grab him.
No, they know what happens, Rich. What happens is no one knows what the F is going on during the game. That's what happens.
It's like the people.
Scott will tell you this. Like Scott will. Scott, I'm not saying anything Scott doesn't know. No, they can't. The reason they do it, Capello, much praise to him.
Yeah,
has figured out that you're gonna. I wonder if they ever thought about a harness
or a shock collar
or something where you didn't have to physically exert yourself so much to pull him down.
And by the way, much credit to Capello. He obviously knows what works. But at some point, don't you kind of got to take the training wheels off the training arm off of Scott Zolak?
This is all by design. It's happened. This is happening because of past mistakes.
And by the way, credit to Bob Soucy. The dude does the entire game standing up, looking through binoculars.
Standing on something, right?
Well, I mean,
he's got to be standing on something. He's got to have a Dale Arnold because he's if not shorter than Dale Arnold, the same size.
So he's sitting there, and it looks like they have also the TV with the broadcast on it, but not in front of them. They kind of have to look at the replay to their left, but they have their headsets on. But Soucy's like, you know, doing the binoculars thing, and Zolak just stands up and starts flipping out. And he's got his hands up. Oh, my God, is this it? Like, he's, like, watching a show with your dad, like, who's, like, way into the game and freaking out. That's what Scott Zolak is.
And the thing about football that's different than Cedric Maxwell just screaming is if a ball goes through the hoop, you kind of know what's going on. And oftentimes there'll be, like, a foul or something, and then you'll just hear Cedric Maxwell going, like, woo, you know, lazy Susan.
Sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. But in football, unfortunately, there is so much to break down after there's a touchdown because it takes 45 minutes to see if they really scored, or you have to describe the play takes much longer.
Yeah.
And so you cannot have someone just screaming uncontrollably in the background while that happens.
I kind of enjoy the screaming.
Yeah, but if you're in the car listening and you care about the game, you want to hear what happened. If it was on TV, it would be different. If it was a preseason game, if it was a regular season game. But the whole thing about radio is that you're describing things through your words.
I mean, this is the play. I mean, listen to Zolak and just see if you can find the moment where Mark Capello's arm ends up like it's the silencer arm, hits him in the stomach.
Edelman now motions to the left as Brady takes the snap. Backs up, looking left. Back shoulder fade for Harry in the end zone. Caught it! Touchdown, Patriots! Beautiful throw, terrific catch for his first career score, N'Keal Harry.
Yeah. I mean, you heard the way exactly what it was like, rookie! And then it kind of cuts off.
And then, he has to shut up because he's stepping on it. Mm. And you know he doesn't want to. But in his mind now, he associates the arm coming and hitting him.
This might have been the best arm one.
Third and a long two. High snap off the hand of Prescott. Gathers it in, sidearms to the near side. Intercepted by Diving Gilmore. Arm. A lazy throw by Prescott.
Nice chuck.
Picked off by
Prescott.
Gilmore.
Arm.
Cooper at the Cowboy 29.
A sad, pathetic throw by Prescott.
He got double armed after that second one. You think, stop. You don't jump in. I told you to wait. You got one armed. Don't make me three arm you.
Yeah. It's one thing when he's calling what's going on during the play. That's fine. But it's in the aftermath of the play that they have to control him. And they have. I think he's learned by now, without being restrained, that he shouldn't say that much during the actual play. I mean, you know, when you see something like a formation or something and you see like a mismatch, you can call it out before the play happens.
I think he actually got crap after the Unicorns and Show Ponies.
He did, which was dumb.
Which was dumb because that's, I mean, if you can have an iconic play-by-play call, I mean, that is when you think of the Patriots radio play-by-play, like that's the first thing you think of.
And
radio,
also,
Unicorn Show Ponies.
And also that happened after the play. Like he wasn't all over Soucy on that. No, that's you got to let him do that. I'm not saying calm him down. I'm just saying that you got to let Soucy call the game, or else it's just a wave of, or else you might as well just be watching, sitting on a couch watching some guy from, you know, Revere just to, like, react to the game.
Joe, after Wallach gets back, can we keep you here just to be his arm when he steps on jokes?
Oh, that'd be impossible. You wouldn't know when it's happening.
I got to tell you guys, that's the hardest part about this gig here, is, like, when you guys are going, you got to know when to back away from the truck.
It's a ballet, I mean? My friend. It's a dance. Come on, dance with us.
All right, well, hopefully we get to talk to Mike Gorman. That will be coming up in just a moment.
Toucher and Rich. The sports Toucher.
I can't believe he did that.
Rich.
Didn't want to be there because he was embarrassed.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Everything just broke down.
Everything just went down. Our big system went down here.
So you don't have anything in there either?
Did the whole system just crash?
Everything just went black.
Everything just crashed.
No page selected.
I literally had to click the thing.
And I had you as the backup, and I went to go click it. I'm like, I have literally nothing.
Okay.
So. Well, this is disconcerting.
All right.
So we have
commercials, Mike's, everything?
Not commercials, I don't think. No.
Okay.
No, I'm just talking about the hotkeys and stuff that you were going to play something.
Everything just disappeared.
All right, so you do have the commercials, so we're not going to be required to talk for an hour straight.
We could do like the Prairie Home Companion and just act out the commercials.
Yeah, we can start meandering into podcast territory and really keep things open. All right, Mike Gorman, fortunately for us.
I had an amazing clip of Mike Gorman from last night. I mean, mind-blowing.
I've heard it and it was life-changing. Mike Gorman is the voice of the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. He's kind enough to join us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hello, Mr. Gorman.
Good morning. Some good play-by-play talk this morning. That's good stuff.
You work with Hines, and we've gone over that. Yeah, he is someone who probably needs to be wrangled a little bit.
But how long did that take for you guys to have that connection where you guys could, you knew exactly when to zig and when he was going to zag?
Not as long as you would think. Probably a couple of years. First, we were doing Providence College games. And I got a chance before I did the Celtics to see what Tommy was like. But they're probably a couple of years. We just fit in that I've always been a less is better guy, and Tommy's been a more is better guy. So we get along pretty well.
Now, that must have been intimidating, though, when you first knew that he was going to be the guy you're going to do the play-by-play with, especially because he's such a big personality. Your first time with him, didn't he say, like, something about all your notes? What did he do? Did he crumple up your notes?
Yeah, he threw him off the balcony. That was for the first game we did. The first college game I did with him, I went to lunch with him to get to meet him, and he sold me an insurance policy.
For real?
Yeah, for real.
Oh, there is nothing more annoying than that. And you bit? Because you probably felt you had to.
I had to. What am I going to say? No thanks?
Yeah, I mean.
Do you have any insurance? And at the time, I had no insurance because I was just
right
at that age in life where you don't give a rat's ass about that. So, he told me an insurance policy the first time in the college game, and then the first pro game we did together, he looked at my notes and he said, "We don't need that blank," and he just crumpled them up in a ball and threw them off the balcony.
Well, I think because one thing is disconcerting throwing your notes. The other thing is in selling you an insurance policy at lunch. Because I've had people invite me out and then, like, with no swiftness or no
tact.
Finesse or tact, just gone, do you want to buy insurance? Are you insane? Like, no. Like, this is a social interaction. Oh, insurance. Oh, boy, thank you so much. I was unaware of all of this, but, yes, I can relate to that.
You know, those guys never really got paid all that much money to play, and so Tommy never feasted off that. So he made most of his living as an insurance agent for a long, long time, first 20 years that I knew him.
Yeah,
you know, that's basically what he did. That and he sold his paintings.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
He's good, by the way.
He's a pretty good painter, yeah.
Really?
Oh, he's very good. He's very good.
Well, Richard Todd, who played briefly for the Jets, but he was a star at Alabama. He was quarterback. He went into finance, and he would just cold call people and say, I'm Richard Todd. And they go, Richard Todd from Alabama? And he go, yeah. And the guy made millions. I mean, people just like, sure, anything you want.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So what do you make of that road trip? They obviously come back with a 2-3 record, which I don't think a lot of people really wanted them to or expected them to, but they were really hard-fought games. You had the one where Kemba goes down. You've got the one against the Clippers, which was hard-fought till the end. I think the margin of loss in those three games was 8 points. What do you take out of that? Is it a positive, or do you look at it as kind of being it is what it is?
I think it's a positive. You know, it was a chance for them to go out and play against good teams, which they did in their buildings. You know, the Golden State thing, that's a kind of a fiasco this year. But the other games are all good, solid games. Phoenix was playing well at the time. I don't think they're going to be a month from now. I don't think we'll be talking about Phoenix, but they were off to a good start at the time. So, I thought they played well on the trip for the most part. Defensively, I thought they played very well. Offensively, they struggled. It's still going through that NBA period of the first 30 or so games where you try to figure out where you are in the food chain and if you're any good this year or not. Then you go into the January, February, just get me to March and April. Games, and then you have the playoffs. So I would say so far, so good. I mean, lost Kemba for a game there last night. Gordon's down. You got 2 of your starting 5 down, and you still win. People are stepping up and playing well. Waters could be a big surprise for this team this year. So they're an interesting bunch to watch. And you know, they're kind of Marcus Smart inspired. You know, more and more, we've talked about this in the past. I mean, this is his team going forward. I mean, I would just make Marcus the captain of this team and just put into it and go forward from there. But he is their emotional leader. He is their leader by example. He made plays last night. Again, it's very trite to say don't show up in the scoring sheet, but they don't. But they were big plays, forcing a guy to take a bad shot, getting not really a block shot, but making a guy turn the ball over. That's a stat that they should have, is the forced turnovers, because he has about 5 or 6 of those a game. And he's who they are, and he's how they're going to play. And, you know, I still think they're better than Philly. Milwaukee's best team in the East. I don't think there's any question about that. Toronto is better than people think. And we're right in the mix here.
There was something on this trip that I thought was probably the most telling. And after Kemba Walker went down in Denver, there was a pretty awesome comeback. And, you know, they obviously didn't win it, but they had a nice rally and the team really played hard. After Kemba Walker went down, they didn't know at the time what was wrong with him. I mean, you take your teammate taken off on a stretcher. That is something that is fairly disturbing. But Brad Stevens said something after the game, which I don't remember him saying definitely about last year's team. And to be quite honest, my memory doesn't serve me saying this about any team. But he called and he's not one to overpraise. But he said what that team did after Kemba Walker went down, those guys are warriors. And he said it twice. Yep. And he goes, man, I just what they did out there, those were warriors. He obviously loves this team from what you've seen. And does that say something about the makeup of last year's team as opposed to this one's?
Volumes. It speaks volumes to the makeup of last year's team as opposed to this one. Yeah. Everybody wants to tiptoe around Kyrie. I don't know why they want to tiptoe around Kyrie. Kyrie just was a square peg trying to fit into a round hole here, and it just didn't work. It just flat out didn't work. And it just mucked up the machinery enough that everybody played poorly. And now you get Kemba come in. He's a completely different personality off the court and a different personality on the court, who still manages to get his 20 to 25 points every game. But all of a sudden, everybody else is better. Brown is better. Smart is better. Tatum is better. Everybody's better. Cancer's better. Everybody's better this year than they were last year. And that's why Brad's so happy, frankly.
I thought that was a pretty cool moment yesterday when you had Tremont Waters come in. I guess he had just won G League Player of the Week, and you know he didn't shrivel up in the moment. Got out there, and the stat sheet only shows 7 points, and you know I forget how many assists, but he was excellent out there. I think he had the best plus minus on the court. What did you think of his performance?
Yeah, he's very good. He brings a specific skill to the team that really doesn't exist there. I mean, I love Wanamaker because I like his toughness most of all, and he works hard at being a playmaker. You don't really want Kemba to be your playmaker. You want him to be your shooter, your scorer. You know, Marcus, you don't really want necessarily to be a playmaker. He can, he has to be. So Waters fits that bill. He gets the ball in his hand. He just wants to distribute it. He wants to penetrate and kick it. He wants to do all the things that you hear coaches say that they want a point guard to do. And despite his size, he's a very good defensive player, as he proved in college. So I think it's interesting, the situation with Waters, and that he's got one of those two-way contracts. But I think we're going to see a lot of him. I mean, last night, they bring him down last night, and he played, 19 minutes in his first pro game. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was especially in important minutes, too.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't garbage time, and it wasn't useless minutes in the second quarter. He was out there when the game was on the line. He's a nice find. He's a good kid. He plays hard. He can score. But he's smart enough to know what the team needs right now, and he has the skill set to fit that, which is a distributor, a penetrator and a distributor. And he's very good at it.
Okay, so Mike, you were, I don't know how close you were to this, so I don't know if you heard this, but did you, Marcus Smart after the Denver game said that when he was chasing a loose ball into the stands, his foot got stuck in a chair, and apparently a fan yelled out to him, "That's right, stay on the ground, get on your knees." And obviously Marcus Smart, very upset about all that.
Yeah.
Did you hear that happen?
Not the guy to say that to.
Yeah, no. The last guy, if they don't know his history, he's been known to, to take up fisticuffs with some people in the stands. That was a knock on him before they got him. But so what, did you hear that happen?
You know, it was diagonally across the court from the broadcast location. I knew there was some back and forth, and heard after the game what specifically the guy had said. I thought Marcus maintained his cool pretty well in that situation. He's, Marcus has got a short fuse. That's part of the reason we love him. And so with that, it's going to come moments where you go, uh-oh, this could be a problem. But I thought he handled that very well. And he was most upset with the fact that security there sided with the guy. That was the thing that I heard afterwards. He was really bummed that he wanted to talk to people in the organization, that the security people didn't come out to protect the player. They came out to protect the guy. And that's usually not the case.
For all the years you've been doing this, where do Celtics fans fall in the pantheon of yelling, pretty awful things to players? Like, where are they and their crowd in the, if you had to go from best to worst, where would they fall?
Best being
there's no shenanigans.
No, like, best being like the most racist.
Right. Like where,
I would say they're way down the bottom of that scale. They don't do that much at all that I hear.
Where's the worst?
I don't. New York.
Really?
Madison Square Garden's tough. Yeah. If you're an opposing player, where else I think would be the worst? Golden State wasn't really the worst. I mean, people weren't going to yell racial stuff at you. Golden State, people were yelling at you all the time, but they were pretty sophisticated with their criticisms and their comments. But in terms of the places where you might get something said that would incite players, I probably would put New York number one.
Finally, are you surprised that Kyrie Irving is not going to be playing tomorrow night?
No, I'm not. No, are you kidding me? You could have put that one, wrote that down a long time ago.
It's funny, I was saying...
I don't know, I don't even know what he's going to play on... we played him again on what, Friday?
Yeah, it's home and home, yep.
Yeah, I don't know whether we're going to play. He's going to show up in that one either. They haven't made any announcement one way or the other.
It's got to be... Go ahead.
They have that, I think I've said this to you guys before. The NBA, general managers of the NBA have this kind of, like Jeffrey Dahmer theory, like if Jeffrey Dahmer had game, there'd be like four NBA GMs who could say, like, in our system, we think he'll be fine. that's the way it is with Kyrie right now. No matter what the evidence appeared to be that he might have been disruptive in the locker room, that he might not have been the best leader that ever came down the pipe. The Nets were convinced, because of the idea of getting Durant, that he'll be fine in our system. He'll be fine in our locker room. And obviously, he hasn't been all that fine.
No, as a matter of fact, with Kyrie, the Nets are 4-7, and without Kyrie, they're 5-1. And I actually don't fault the Nets for making that signing, because if you're going to get Kevin Durant, hell yeah, I will take Kyrie Irving. And I think, as a matter of fact, Kyrie Irving might not be as annoying when he's the number two instead of the number one guy. But this year, they're just going to have to sit there and watch exactly what happened with the Celtics. And even worse, I would think, in this scenario.
If it wasn't the whole reason that we went through everything we went through last year, is Kyrie wanted to be the guy.
Yep.
And he wanted to lead a team.
And he can't be.
Well, unless Durant is comfortable ceding that role to him, yeah. You would think there's going to be a conflict there. But I'm told they are very tight. They're good friends. They've been wanting to do this, play together on the same team for quite some time. That they say it'll be absolutely no problem. You know, time will tell. I don't think they're going to see Durant at all this year. I think the Nets are going to play to put themselves in a good position for a lottery pick. It's going to be tough for Kyrie. It'll be interesting to see at the end of the year when you look back how many games he actually played. Because right now he's about, what, 500? Played maybe half the games?
Yeah, I think that's right. He has played in 11, no, a little more than that. But, yeah, they're 4-7 with him. They're 5-1 without him.
Okay. So, yeah. All right.
God,
so,
I want to see Marcus Smart on him so bad. I want to see Marcus Smart versus Kyrie so bad.
Will he even show up this week? Will he even be there, and will you say hello to him at all?
No, he's not taking the trip.
Oh, he's not even making the trip.
There's no way. Yeah. Nope, he's not making the trip.
No, yeah, he's out.
Hell no, he's not going to be in the building.
We're not even sure he's in the country.
That's right.
Did you hear Paul Pierce go off on him? I thought that was great.
I didn't hear that. No, did he?
He said, because it was from Danny Ainge's interview with us, because we asked Danny Ainge, is he going to get a video tribute? And he goes, I don't make those decisions. I said, do you want him to have one, or would you mind if he had one? He goes, well, sure. I think that'd be fine. I said, you know he's going to get booed. And he goes, well, that would be a sad state of affairs if that happened. Well, they played that for Paul Pierce on ESPN. And he goes, man, it is going to be the loudest booing in the history of the league when he shows up. If he shows up at the TD Garden, that was before they announced that he wasn't making the trip. Yeah. So, yeah, Paul gets it.
It'll rival LeBron in that playoff series about, 5 years ago, 6 years ago? When he and Pierce got hooked up in that great battle. Every time LeBron touched it, literally the whole place booed. I think it will be that way for Kyrie. If and when he shows up here,
it's going to be hard where he plays not to eventually show up. All right.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, well, he'll figure out a way. There's nothing better in the world than being a star in the NBA. You can pretty much do whatever you want. You can not practice or anything. All right. To Mike Gorman, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for joining the discussion late, Fred. That was good.
Listen, you seem to have a rapport going with Rich, and I did not want to interrupt your flow. But I do wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving.
And you and your family, too. Rich, same. Yeah. Everybody in the studio, have a wonderful day.
I'm picking up the clubs today, taking them home. No more.
Are you? All right.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. A little Thanksgiving tea time. That's good.
There you go. All right, Mr. Mike Gorman, have a wonderful day.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, take it easy. There you go. He always gets upset that I don't talk enough.
He likes you. He wants you to, you know, come at him more.
I would say Mike Gorman is a friend. Mm-hmm. I've spent social time with him.
Yep.
So what are you going to do? All right. When we come back, one of the great Americans of all time sat down, and he ain't taking it no more, from what I hear. Now, Rich yelled at me to stop watching.
I heard him watching a small clip on his phone this morning. I went, put it away.
I am not going to tell you what's going on. I'll be hearing it for basically the first time. We will have that for you, but first, the headlines.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And when you think about America, you think about muscle cars, you think about taking the bull by the horns, and you think about sweet pizza pie.
Let me ask you this, Joe Murray.
Yes, sir.
What is the biggest memory that burns in your mind of the Peyton Manning Super Bowl win when he was with the Broncos? What happened the second they had won that game?
I mean, I was pissed. I I thought,
you'd lost money? Is that why?
Well, no. I hit big on that one.
Okay.
I knew that was good. I don't know. I just like the Mannings winning another Super Bowl.
No, see, the image that will always be in my brain is that before he hugged or kissed his wife or really his coach or anybody else.
I don't want to step on
it. Go ahead.
No, Papa John's guy.
Before he
not the Papa John's guy. Papa John.
Papa John himself. John Schnatter. Come on. As if he's not the biggest rock star in the building that day. I mean, like, literally the game, it was the second it was over, the camera's right in his face. He wins the Super Bowl, and the first person who's there next to him giving him a big hug, Papa mother effing John.
And the more I think about it, I don't think that's Peyton Manning's necessarily his fault. I think that Papa John kind of snuggled up to Peyton.
You don't say.
And was like, here we go.
So you're telling me that you think that Papa John is the biggest star in the room. You think that he's the guy that, you know, is the one who's the way he forces himself in all the commercials.
If you're watching the Super Bowl, I mean, you don't get on the sidelines for nothing. I mean, you've hit half court shots. You've thrown the ball. You've shown up at some random idiot's house and been like, and they're like, I just ordered a pizza. What in the living F? Papa John?
There is a commercial, literally a commercial, where Papa John shows up at a birthday party and a little girl faints because Papa John walked in. He's like, put it in the commercial.
And the man had to sell his marrow, not bone marrow, but his cum marrow, and which, by the way, I would love to have. And ironically, but he sells Camaro for his first pizza oven. You know, he's down on his luck. He's just a kid with a dream. Then eventually got to buy that sweet, sweet Camaro back because Papa John took over the nation with its fresh dipping sauces.
So I don't know how they got this coup, but there is a television station. I think this is in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. It's his home base. It's probably Louisville.
Okay. Who is able to sit down and do the very first one-on-one with Papa John since he was ousted unceremoniously from his own company.
How can you take... It's like removing my skin. You don't own this. And by the way, Papa John looks great. He is... the way he's bright red and sweating, he is obviously a picture of health. If you put him up against someone who has been up doing blow for the last 5 weeks... They wouldn't look the same. I can tell you that. I believe there is sweat dripping from Papa John during this. Now, maybe it's his passion, or maybe he's just been making zuff for the boys and the crew.
Making zuff.
He's just been making some zuff from the boys and the crew without a sight dipping sauces. But here is the one and only Papa John and how these bastards can still use his name. Here we go.
That's the one thing that I missed.
Controversy cost him his company, his co-workers, and some of his closest friends. But John Schnatter says one of his most painful casualties from the Papa John's catastrophe...
If I could have one thing back, I'd put the name back on that stadium. I haven't been to a football game yet.
Okay. It's not that he was labeled a racist and that he was ousted from his company and probably lost millions upon millions of dollars. Is that... My name's not on the stadium anymore.
Now, which was Papa John's stadium?
It was like University.
Louisville.
Louisville, yeah.
Because he went to the... If he didn't... Maybe... I don't know if he went to Louisville or not, but if he didn't, he's probably just like, you know what? Your ivory tower wouldn't let me in. I'm naming this son of a bitch. This is my town. This is Papa's town.
He went to Ball State.
That's right, he did.
What state?
Harvey Balls.
Ball State.
Yeah, he went to Ball State. He was like, I got into Louisville, but they gave me me and Eckersley headed over to Ball State. Let's just say we had a ball with some sorority sweeties. Had them all up. There's dozens of boobs. That was the only math I took. Two jugs, two roommates equals four.
That hurts.
The University of Louisville, University of Kentucky, and Purdue all cut ties with Schnatter after he used the N-word while on an internal conference call on diversity training. For the first time, he's sharing new details about that call.
Well, the conference call was taped. It was secretly taped. That's good for me because I didn't say anything that was racist.
In fact, Schnatter says he was quoting another famous founder, trying to convey his hatred of racism.
Sooner or later, the tape's going to come out in public, and people are going to go, wow, that's what he said. And so that's what he said. And they're going, they made this out of that. They know what they did. They know it was a setup. They know this in things, an entire farce.
Schneider believes the people who set him up were part of his circle of trust and were motivated by money.
They wanted to get rid of me because they were watching that $150 million a year in profit. So they wanted, you know, they wanted the money, which is, you know, a motivator.
Schneider said
they saw that sweet, sweet, no pun intended, slice of the pie.
It was another founder that he was quoting.
It was Colonel Sanders. There's no doubt about it.
That Dave Thomas.
Well, who knows what Dave Thomas is up to? Oh, he's rotten away. But I'll tell you this, is that it was Taco Bell. It's Mr. Bell. What have you been up to? Let's just say, not a fan of the Mexicans. I'm going to make the most un-Mexican Mexican food in the entire world. It's a conspiracy. Hardee's, Mr. Hardy, what are you doing? Mr. Arby's, what are you doing? I'm slicing them hot dogs and making them into steak sandwiches.
Long John Silver, he was one racist pirate.
That, well, listen, he was, if you look, it's like Columbus. If you look back to the real history of Long John Silver, he was not just frying fish.
Schneider says top Papa John's executives use damaging misinformation to force him out.
I don't think the public buys this nonsense.
For now, Schneider...
they really have. They've been protesting.
Well,
the
public does. The public knows what's right. They don't buy this nonsense. Pick up a newspaper. Oh, that's right. Fake news.
For now, Schneider says he has a bad taste in his mouth for both the pizza and company that bear his name.
I feel so negative and pessimistic about the company that I've sold a lot of stock. I've probably had over 40 pizzas, 40, in the last 30 days.
Wait, what?
You don't say.
Wait, what does that even mean?
He's eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 Papa John's pizzas?
That's not sweat coming out of his cheeks. That's the dipping sauce.
I mean, he's puffy and wait, what? What the hell does that even mean?
He's had 40 pizzas in the last 30 days.
I love pizza, but that's a lot of pizza.
Wait a second.
Joe, at your most gluttonous, have you ever even had half of that?
No.
Wait, okay, so he's saying that he's had 40 pizzas in 40
pizzas in 30 days.
So he's like, you're losing my business.
He's had I think he's doing a quality test.
Oh.
He's doing a quality test here.
Okay.
I've probably had over 40 pizzas, 40, in the last 30 days. They don't make the pizza the way that I used to make it, the way we used to make it.
Yeah, I mean, without Papa John in the kitchen throwing the dough in the air.
It's just his presence in the company. Like, the Papa John's in Topeka, Kansas completely changed their formula after you were ousted from the company.
I mean, those cans of industrial-sized tomato sauce.
This Sisco tastes different than normal.
That's right.
40? Why 40? A test? Yes. What was he doing?
Hey, the mozzarella is not the same since you changed the cow. Papa, where are you? The dipping sauce, it ain't a real butter no more. What you doing to that dipping sauce? It's not a garlic.
It just doesn't taste the same.
Since his departure, Papa...
I love that so much. Where's the magic of touch? You know, they don't even... forget it. You know what I'm saying?
40 pizzas.
I've had 40 pizzas. That'll show them.
Since his departure, Papa John's has tried to distance itself from John Schneider. It's fighting struggling sales with a new slogan.
Better ingredients. Better pizza. Better day.
And a new pitch man.
I think if you had Shaq in the right role, I think he'd do great.
Although he has been critical of most of the decisions the company has made in his absence, Schneider believes hiring NBA legend Shaquille O'Neal was the right pick, but the wrong play.
I think Shaq would be great complimenting the founder.
He actually said it.
Maybe like, you know, I do a 360 tomahawk dunk.
So it's him.
Yeah.
And then Shaq?
Yeah. Like, yeah, listen, Shaq by himself don't work unless you got the comedy duo of me and Shaq. Like, I'm what makes this thing.
Yeah, like Shaq's under the basket. Here he goes. Oh, he's got the rebound, and he's going to dunk. And then here comes Papa John swatting that thing away. And then the ball lands in a big industrial canister of butter sauce. And then Shaq goes and eats the ball because he loves the butter sauce so much. I mean, you can only have one star of the show. You know, they don't ask Brad Pitt to, you know, let some young buck come in there.
I mean, listen, Shaq's fine, okay? I mean, he's a moderate star. But put him with a real star like John Schnatter of Papa John's.
Well, I mean, this is Papa John. Or maybe like a, hey, you know, there's a big party and I'm banging all these chicks. And then Shaq comes out of the big pizza and says, hey, Papa John, but I'm, you know, I'm nailing these broads. They need, you know, he's a nice side, like, you know, it's like Penn and Teller, like, this Shaq doesn't talk, but hey, he's over here, he's my big friend. Like, this lady at Papa John, she can't reach something on the top shelf, so Shaq goes to reach. I go, not so fast, and I leap over both of them. Or Shaq's standing on the side of the road, and this car goes by, and they try to shoot him. And I jump in front of the bullet, and they think they killed me. But wrong, I had two butter sauces on my nips.
Yeah, I know. All right, and then
five. I mean, you got a guy that's 5'10", a guy that's 7'2". I mean, I think the economy and the dynamics of the two personalities, that would be fun.
I mean, he actually said it. We all knew that's what he thought, that he was the star. Okay, so here's what he thinks of this, is that Shaq's not a big enough star unless you got Papa John in the commercials.
Well, you need the height differential.
And the minute he was ousted from the company, magically, the taste of all the pizzas changed. And yeah, it's now garbage after he tested it by having 40 pizzas in 30 days.
Yeah.
The sauce is still good.
Why, you're not using the right tomato. Come on. The mozzarella, she's not from the right cow.
All right. Well, listen, Papa John is a hero to all of us. We'll be back with Will Brinson.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.